Hi, this is Doug March from Built to Spill. You're listening to The Vinyl Guide.
This episode is brought to you by Vintage Media Grading at vmgvinyl.com. Explore how professional grading can protect your records at vmgvinyl.com.
And now, on with the show.
Well, hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 410 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today, dear friends, we have on the show Mr. Doug March of Built to Spill, discussing some of the highlights, collectibles, and clarifying some mysteries of the vinyl catalog of Built to Spill and Tree People as well, from original pressings to recent reissues to challenges with past labels to their current home with Sub Pop and all things in between. As you may know, the more recent Built to Spill album, When the Wind Forgets Your Name, is available now on Sub Pop Records and likely hiding in your local record shop somewhere. Go shake them down for a copy. Also of note, especially for Australians, Built to Spill is touring down here the month of October. Sydney, Brisbane, Hobart, Melbourne, Adelaide. Links to tickets are at feelpresents.com. And get them quick, because several of the shows are already sold out. Oh, and I got to tell you, there is an extended version of this interview only available to show patrons at patreon.com/vinylguide. Some additional record nerd questions with Doug, more details, more chit-chat, and of course, it's not only an extended interview, but it's also commercial-free and high-resolution, too. We do that all the time for our patrons. That's patreon.com/vinylguide. Go up there now, help support the show, and enjoy all the extras. And one last thing, we have several hundred other episodes available to enjoy anytime via your favorite podcast app. Episodes like 408 with the late Sixto Sugarman Rodriguez, who you may know from the documentary Searching for Sugarman. That's episode 408 of The Vinyl Guide. Jody Stevens of Big Star, episode 405. Comedian, actor, and podcast pioneer Mark Maron, episode 400. Louise Post of Veruca Salt, episode 394. Jay Maskus of Dinosaur Jr., episode 393. Steve Turner of the Mighty Mud Honey, episode 384, and lots more. Follow the Vinyl Guide podcast for free in your favorite podcast app. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. And with that, let's talk records, vinyl, and music nerdery with Doug March of Built to Spill. All right, Doug. Well, good to finally connect with you. Our show is The Vinyl Guide. We go out to a lot of record collectors and music nerds and folks like that. And there's a lot of records. I mean, when Built to Spill records their album, it seems that there's a lot of care that goes into the packaging. And it would seem to me, the way I read it, is the vinyl format seems to be the format that the band is going for, with the imagery and the things that are inside the record.
For sure. Yeah. Especially on this latest record, for sure.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to Built to Spill reissues and even Tree People reissues, you're starting to go back in the catalog and starting to reissue some of these over the last handful of years. Do you foresee a lot more reissues coming?
Well, I hope so. Warner Brothers, who has most of our records, doesn't want to put them out. And so I've been trying to get someone else to do it. Sub Pop says they want to do it. So I'm just waiting for it to all happen. But supposedly Sub Pop wants to reissue them, or at least some of them. I'm hoping all of them. If not, I know someone else that might. I know a couple other people that might be interested in helping out. So
okay,
hopefully they'll get out there someday.
Are you getting cooperation from some of the, like Warner Brothers? Are they cooperative if someone else wants to press it, or is it a big hassle?
Oh, both. They'll let someone else do it, but I don't think it's easy to do, and I feel like I don't know the details, but it seems like it's unnecessarily difficult still to do the licensing. So hopefully Sub Pop can figure it out, because they're already kind of connected to Warner Brothers through WEA and stuff. So, but I don't know. I bug them every once in a while, and they keep telling me they're working on it. So hopefully that's what's happening.
All in due time.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone say, I just had to work with one of these major labels. It was an absolute pleasure. No problems at all. Are you aware of all the Built to Spill or even Tree People master tapes? Do you know where those master and multi-track tapes are?
Well, I don't know. I guess I have a couple things around here. The Warner Brothers stuff, part of the, you know, I was contractually obligated to send the tapes to Warner Brothers. So they have that stuff archived somewhere, I guess.
Okay. It exists though. I know 10 years ago or so there was that big fire.
I don't know. Yeah, they could be gone. I don't know anything about it, actually.
Okay. When someone does a reissue, do you tend to get involved? Are you involved at all? Or sometimes a reissue happens, you had no idea what's happening, you just become aware of it?
I think almost every time something has been reissued, I've found out on Instagram or something. I've never been aware or known what's going on. They just do it when they do it.
Got it. Okay. Because I don't know if you keep up with the record collectible market. You may have heard word that some of the original pressings of many of the albums go for hundreds of dollars.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah. Some of the ones, especially from earlier in the career when there was only a limited number of records made, you know, because vinyl wasn't the cool thing at the time. Yeah, those tend to go for quite a hefty fee. Keep It Like a Secret. The early ones goes for quite a bit. So yeah, so that's why we're all very interested in potential reissues.
Sure. Yeah, and people ask me when we're out on tour and stuff, and yeah, I'm doing what I can over here.
Yeah, fair enough. And going back to Tree People, prior to Tree People, how familiar were you with I guess the band before you joined, State of Confusion? Is that right?
Yeah, I was very familiar. They were my favorite punk rock band here in Boise, my favorite hardcore band ever, one of my all-time favorites. So, yeah, I was a big fan of theirs for, you know, a few years before they broke up and I joined what was left of them. It was a switch up. So, State of Confusion, they lost their drummer, and then Scott, the guitar player, and I became the guitar players of Tree People. And then the bass player, Wayne, went over to drums, and the singer, Pat, went over to bass. And those two were novices at those instruments. So it was kind of we all kind of learned how to make music together.
There was a cassette that you recorded in 1989, No Mouth Pipetting.
Mm-hmm.
That only just came out on vinyl, 2018 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
When you made that that tape, do you recall how many were made? And what what the band's thinking was of what they wanted to do with that tape?
I don't know how many we made. I mean, I can't imagine that we made more than a few hundred. You know, we did it ourselves. We'd sell them at our shows, and we didn't have much of a following then. So yeah, I really don't know. You know, I mean, I'm thinking at the time. I can't remember too well, but I'm sure it was just the cheapest thing to do to get some music out. It was really before CDs. Right. CDs existed at that time, but, you know, independent bands didn't really know how to do it themselves. And most punk people didn't have CD players back then. And then vinyl was probably just too expensive.
It's a big commitment. You had to make like 500 or something. Yeah.
Exactly, totally. I think it was too big of a commitment for us at that time.
Okay. Well, shortly thereafter, same year, you made a 7-inch, Important Things.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about making that, because there's a few different versions available. There's a regular, there's a yellow cover. Do you recall the difference in the variation there?
No, I didn't know there was any variation. I wonder if it was a later repressing of it or something. I have no idea. And that was my experience, was just that we all lived in Boise and we made a road trip to Seattle to record at Reciprocal with Jack and Dina. And that was what, you know, Sub Pop had just started, and we were looking at where they were doing stuff and who they were working with. So that was our plan, but Jack and Dino was not available. And then we got there and he was available. So it was really exciting to get to work with him. He was really, really sweet, fun to work with. And yeah, we made that single. And then not too long afterwards, ended up moving to Seattle.
Do you remember the message in the runout groove of that single?
No, I don't at all.
maybe this will jog your memory. The Boise dork will die in Idaho.
I don't know whose idea that was or what it means at all. That sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't know its meaning. It doesn't ring any special bells in me.
Right. Well, the label of that record was Silence. Do you recall who Silence Records was?
Yeah, that was the SOC guys. They had a zine called Silence, and they put out a State of Confusion record on that. And that was just, and I think we ended up using it again, maybe here and there for some things. It was the way that we release things ourselves if someone else didn't do it. I assume No Mouth Pipetting was Silence as well, but I'm not 100 about that.
No Mouth Pipetting. The cassette was on Silence, but then there was also a self-released, Tree People self-released. So maybe
same thing.
It was the same. Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, one. Yeah, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
And those records, I assume, went to various local shops, sold at shows. How did you distribute those records? Do you remember?
I'm not really sure. I can't remember if we found a distributor at that time to help out a little bit. I was so kind of not involved in that side of things. I guess, you know, we all talked about it and stuff, but Pat, the bass player, he was the guy who really got things going. He's the one that got things pressed. And
okay.
He was the one that did everything, you know, like making posters and making shirts and finding a label for us and all that kind of stuff, booking shows. He was really the business side of things. And I, you know, we were all close and talked about everything. So I'm sure that at one time I, you know, was aware of where things were being distributed, but I really don't remember it. Again, I don't think there's a whole lot of those either.
Yeah, fair enough. There's always, I guess it's a pattern I've seen. There's always at least one person in the band that kind of gets a little fascinated with the logistics of putting these sort of things together.
Yeah, and especially at this time, it was really, you know, like there wasn't such a blueprint of how to do this stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, you really had to figure it out to, you know, to me it was like, I was blown away that we could even like book a studio date with Jack and Dino, you know, that you could do that, you know. It seems so, everything seems so out of reach to me, to my young mind about the music industry and stuff. So anytime we ever did anything, I was so blown away that I had figured out how to do it.
Okay. So Jack and Dino had a really good reputation because you were in Boise, Idaho, which, mm-hmm. again, it's, you know, some distance from the epicenter of Seattle. But Jack and Dino's reputation made it that far that early.
Yeah. I mean, we were aware of Sub Pop. Tad, our friend from Boise, was on that label, and you know, we knew about Nirvana and Soundgarden, Mudhoney, stuff like that. So and you know, we noticed that it was the same producer studio and those things. And yeah,
it seems like your projects have always been in the orbit of Sub Pop, but never directly on the label until just recently. Yeah, I mean, how did you avoid each other for so long?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we had a lot of friends like Tad and Chris Dacchino, who started Up Records, which was connected to Sub Pop. Mm-hmm. That were fans of us that I think championed us a little bit and tried to see if Sub Pop was interested. And Scott, our guitar player, had a meeting with one of those guys, Bruce or Jonathan, at some point, and went and, you know, asked him to put out Guilt, Regret, Embarrassment, and they just never were interested in us for I don't know what reason. So we would have loved to have been on that label at that time. That would have been ideal for us. Instead, we ended up on on the crappiest label in the Northwest, CZ.
Okay. Well, Guilt, Regret, Embarrassment, I think that was on Toxic Shock. Is that?
Yep, that's what we ended up doing going with Toxic Shock.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, because Toxic Shock, I know they had Dayglow Abortions and a few others on there. Do you remember?
Yeah, they have a ton of stuff. I just talked, had a little talk yesterday with Damien from Fucked Up, and he was telling me about all kinds of things that Toxic Shock had done, like just tons of records from throughout the world and stuff. I didn't really know that about them. And our experience with them was great. He was a great guy and, you know, put out the record nicely. He was cool to us. And he gave us the record back in a few years. He had it revert back to us and just had it. It was just boilerplate in his contracts that the band gets the record back, you know, and he could have done anything with us because we were clueless. And that's what CZ did. CZ ripped us off in a way that, you know, he didn't. And so he's a cool guy. He's, you know, proud to have been on that label.
So CZ, just kidding on that. That's never reverted back to you. That one's.
Yeah. Something Vicious for Tomorrow. And then subsequent Tree People records that I wasn't on. And the first Built to Spill records also on CZ.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Cause Just Kidding is actually the original pressing is quite hard to find. That one definitely goes for, that's in the hundreds. Apparently there's a locked groove on the track House of Pain. Do you recall anything about that?
No, that was a little after my time. I was kind of half in Just Kidding. I showed up and did a little bit of stuff, but I was pretty much out of the band by the time that record was being made. And I was, didn't have any say about what happened with it.
So then Built to Spill, Ultimate Alternative Waivers. Tell me about creating Built to Spill in that environment in the early 90s when I think there was a lot of music focus in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, well, a few of the songs I had written, and they were going to be Tree People songs. And then those guys decided to do some stuff without me because I was kind of dragging my feet a little bit about some touring they wanted to do, and they wanted to move on. So I decided to put together just a little project and go in the studio and record these songs that I had. And I did it here in Boise. And, you know, I didn't feel like I was attached to the Northwest and the Northwest hype. I felt like I was just making a little, you know, little, some music for me and my friends. CZ had a leaving members clause in their contract, so they put it out.
Oh, that's how that got to CZ, because you left Tree People, so they had first right of refusal for Ultimate.
Exactly. And at the time I was pretty thrilled about it, actually. I was happy to do it with CZ because I didn't think I could find anyone to put it out. So, you know, in that way, CZ was good to at least they put it out. Right. I didn't shop it around or anything, because at that point I really couldn't even imagine how to shop it around or who would be interested or anything. But CZ, they put it out, but they didn't really pay the studio for it. And, you know, in retrospect, CZ has been making lots and lots of money off that record. Or I don't know about lots and lots of money, but I've offered him several times, like $10,000 or more to buy the rights of the record back, and he won't sell it to me, but he sends us royalty checks of like $100 every year or something. So somehow something's happening that somehow it's worth more than, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to him, but we're only seeing little tiny bits of it. And he doesn't have a record label anymore, so he's not paying his employees or paying rent or doing any of that stuff. So I have a bad taste in my mouth from him.
Yeah, because the last time that was reissued is 2014, so almost 10 years ago since any, at least physical form media, has gone out on that.
Well, good. I hope he doesn't put it out ever again, and soon it'll revert back to us.
Is there a timing for that? Is there a standard? I think a lot of the clauses tend to be like after 20 or 30 years. So is there a point in time where it will automatically revert?
Yeah, 35 years.
Okay. So yep. That's, Boy, I'm shit at math.
Yeah, it's about 4 years, three or four years, something. Five years, maybe.
Before 2030. Okay.
I think it came out in 93. So, yeah, we're looking 93. At 5 years.
Now, were you happy with the reception of it in 93?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was happy. Yeah, totally. I was really proud of it. And, you know, I don't know what the reception was. But I was proud of it. And I can't remember what people thought of it. I don't remember reviews of it or anything.
I remember it was extremely popular. And the cover of the album, I think, was a huge draw. That's what drew my attention to it. It was so nice. Lovingly cheesy.
Yeah, I was proud of that, too. My wife at the time, that was her album cover concept, and we were proud of it.
Yeah. There was also a single around the time, Car Girl, Handmade Singles. Do you recall those?
Yeah, that was after we made that record. That record was made with a couple of friends that just sort of weren't going to be in the band, but just helped me make the record. And then I got kind of more of a lineup together. With Brett and Andy. Mm-hmm. I think what we did was we were going to Seattle to play our first show up there. And I had just done some Halo Benders stuff with Calvin and met him and done some stuff with him. And so he invited us to come to a studio. We just went into his basement and banged out, I think, six songs in an afternoon. The six songs went onto three singles that different Olympia labels put out. Kate put out one, and I can't remember the names of the other labels, but they were two of Calvin's friends and my friends that put out the other singles.
Yeah, I think there was Atlas and mm-hmm. Face the Music.
There you go.
Now those singles, there's some colored singles. There's some different variations of those. That are quite collectible. There's also Handmade Sleeves. Were you involved in any of that? Did you make those, any of the sleeves, or that was someone else?
Yeah, that was someone else. One of them, was it the Atlas one or the Face of the Music one that they, the guy like would go to thrift stores and buy a bunch of old records, and then he would go home and cut them down to the size of a 7-inch and then just slap a sticker saying what it was with I think I had a little Mike Shear drawing on it, a guy who did a lot of artwork for Tree People and Built to Spill.
Yeah, the dot art, the black and white kind of dotted art.
Yeah, yeah. Pointillism
thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one. And they're, again, quite collectible. An unknown quantity of those handmade versions. So that wouldn't be a number that you recall at all, is there?
Of course not.
I got to ask. I have to ask. My job.
I know. Of course you do.
And then there was the So and So So and So single on Saturn 9. Who was Saturn 9?
Oh, well, that was one of those singles. That was one of the three singles that I thought we were talking about.
Car Girl.
Car Girl was one. So and So, and what was the other side of that? Sick and Wrong, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, and then Joyride.
Yeah, no, Joyride. I can't remember what was on the other side of Joyride.
Sick and Wrong.
Oh, yeah. Sick and Wrong's on Joyride. So and So, I don't can't remember what the B side of that one was. Oh,
Terrible
maybe
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned Up Records. There was a conversation about bringing the band to Sub Pop. And then Chris Tanacco of Up brought you there. Mm-hmm. And so there was another Sub Pop near miss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect from now on. It was the first on Warner Brothers. I understand. Correct me if I'm wrong. The band signed to Warner Brothers. One of the key decision points was that they offered health care.
Well, they didn't offer health care, but we kind of fought a little bit for it, but not as... I think it's been romanticized maybe a little bit over the years, and we didn't get health care really. What we got was, for one thing, only I got signed to Warner Brothers as the only band member. And what they did is for a while they paid our health insurance. And that just kind of fell away to the wayside. At that time, my wife was managing the band and dealing with that kind of stuff. And I don't know how long they just kind of stopped doing that. Mm. So that's a little bit of a weird, you know, a story that sounds like something that there's not much there.
Got it. Okay. Being in Australia, the concept of the healthcare is quite confusing when they see how important it is in the U.S. You know, when you leave a job, you know, healthcare is one of the primary things that people ask about. Do you still have healthcare? How does that transfer? Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah. Totally. There's people that, yeah, that have, you know, keep their job just for that. Yeah. It's horrible.
Yeah. So with Perfect From Now On, I understand that was recorded several times. There were several different mishaps in recording that. Yeah. Can you take us through what those were?
We'll be back after these messages.
There's no doubt about it. Record collecting has become a serious hobby and even an investment for many around the world. So record collectors have to ask themselves how best to protect their prized records and confidently buy and sell with others. There is an option to consider. Vintage media grading at VMGVinyl.com. VMGVinyl.com will professionally grade your record and encase it in protective plastic, so your record will retain its value for decades to come. This is the same approach that comic book and sports card collectors have done for years. Now, I know many record collectors will be horrified with the thought of having their records graded and encased in plastic. And for the majority of records, this isn't necessary. But if you have top dollar records that you need to protect, maybe a super rare album that's languishing on the shelf, a one-off misprint, or a special LP that you want to protect, look up VMGVinyl.com, Vintage Media Grading, and see if this service is right for you. That's Vintage Media Grading, VMGVinyl.com.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. So with Perfect From Now On, I understand that was recorded several times. There were several different mishaps in recording that. Yeah, can you take us through what those were?
Yeah. The first time I recorded it, I wanted to try to play all the instruments myself, but I don't know how to play the drums. So I recruited a drummer, this guy, Peter Lansdowne, who's in this great drummer from this great band, the Purdens from Seattle. And he and I worked on it for a little while. And I just kind of, I don't know, it just wasn't doing it for me. And I don't know if it was like, I don't know if we just weren't capturing the energy by just playing with the two of us in the studio, or if I just didn't give it enough time. And maybe I was just insecure about it for other reasons, the pressure of being on a major label or something. But somehow, for some reason, I decided to bag it and start all over again. And rather than working with him again, just sort of finding a bass player and working with Peter again or whatever, I decided to just like try a whole new thing. And so that's when I recruited Scott and Brett. And then we rehearsed a bit, and we were kind of like rehearsed for a week or two or something, and then went and recorded it again. And this time we did some overdubs. We were going to do most of the overdubs in Boise, and Phil mm-hmm. drove down to Boise, the producer, to and when he got when we started working on it, one of the songs, the tape was kind of like leaving a little bit of dust, and so we were kind of concerned that these tapes might have gotten baked a little bit in the sun, and that maybe they weren't going to last.
Okay.
And so it's kind of, we're not really sure how baked they got or all of how much of it got hurt, damaged, but we just didn't want to keep working on it in case something happened. It might have been the tape machine, might have been just like a calibration thing or something, you know? I'm not sure if it even was that.
I've talked to some artists that occasionally they will get, they got a bum tape. And
exactly, or a bum tape, totally. Yeah. So, but at that point, we were kind of like, well, we don't want to take a chance. Maybe we should just do this thing again. And what we did is we did it again. And really, having another week of rehearsal and having gone through the recording process, we all just felt like we did a way better job. Like, just the songs, everyone just played them way better. So, whatever the reason, that's what ended up happening. And then, and one of the songs we ended up using from the first session, from Peter's session, Made Up Dreams, and it survived. We were able to, I overdubbed a bunch of stuff on it. We ran it a bunch of times while we were mixing it, you know, and that tape made it through. So I'm not sure that the tape, you know, I'm not sure if that other tape would have been okay, but again, we ended up with better versions of the songs.
Right.
You know, it was a tough, because it was a time when, you know, I'd gone from like, just spending like a couple thousand bucks in the studio. When we made Ultimate Alternative Waivers, we just worked off times in the studio. He just gave us all these off times. And then he billed CZ, and CZ didn't even pay him. CZ sent him a bunch of merchandise, sent him CZ merchandise instead of paying him, and which I didn't find out till years later. But anyway, so for us to like spend, and then we were going to like a good studio, and we were paying a producer and all this stuff. And it was just like, we were just racking up, you know, tens of thousands of dollars already. And it was like, oh my God. And so bagging that stuff and starting over again was really difficult to our minds. It was
against your nature. Right.
It was. Yeah, totally. And then, you know, I talked to some people. I talked to Calvin Johnson, and he was just like, you're not going to remember the money. You're going to remember this, you know, these things. You got to make the music right, because, you know, 20 years from now, you're not even going to remember this money. And he was right, you know?
Well, you do remember the money, but yeah. but no, I get the point.
But it's also like, it's also major label money that we never recouped. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of like, it just lost in the shuffle.
Did you ever miss any of the performances from the destroyed tapes?
No, not really. The only thing that I missed was I made a bunch of demos of all the songs on a cassette 8-track at home. And at some point I just threw them all away, because I was just like, I don't give a shit about these. These are horrible. And they were kind of stupid, but I've regretted that, because I thought they'd be fun to go back and listen to. And I just threw them away thinking that they were just like sketches that weren't necessary to, you know. But there's, you know, I have so many other crappy things lying around, you know, so many other weird cassettes and stuff that I did keep. I don't know why I didn't just hold on to them.
Now, in 1997, there was a vinyl version of Perfect From Now On that was released on Up Records. And back in the late 90s, there was some similar deals with like Amphetamine Reptile when Melvins were on Atlantic, where Atlantic wanted to make vinyl, but they didn't want to distribute it, so they just gave it to a smaller label, AMREP. Was this sort of the same thing? Warner's just let Up have the records to sell?
Totally. I don't think they even wanted to release vinyl at that point. I think this was the point where vinyl was dead, and they were just like, yeah, you know, and they licensed it. I don't know what the deal was, you know, they just didn't want to even bother with it. So Up put out the vinyl. I think of the first couple records, I'm not sure, they might have done Keep It Like a Secret too, but they definitely did Perfect From Now On.
Yeah, It was pretty common practice. In fact, from what I understand, Atlantic even pressed up the vinyl and paid for it for AMRAP for Melvins. So that could have been.
Yeah, that might have been the deal. I'm not really sure what the specifics were.
Right. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, that one is quite collectible. People can find it. There were some reissues on Warner in 2007, I think, and again just recently. Are you involved in the? Were you aware of those, or that's another one of those surprise? You've been reissued.
Yeah, I always find out about that stuff from someone else. I don't think they've ever notified me that they were doing any of that stuff.
Okay, someone brings it to a gig and asks for an autograph, and you're like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Or just someone tells me about it, like, oh, yeah, I saw your record got re-released, reissued.
All right. So Keep It Like a Secret, the song You Were Right, there's a lot of complications because of many lyrics of different songs, different well-known songs. Was there a process of vetting or securing the rights for those little clippets of lyrics?
There was, and I didn't think they should do it. I thought that it was all like, seemed to me like, it didn't feel like it was sampling. It didn't feel like those lyrics were even like, it seemed like they were all just cliches, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't think anyone needed to be asked permission, but Warner Brothers lawyers did think so. And so they did, and they got clearance for everything. I think everyone just gave it to us. I feel like maybe the Jimi Hendrix people, there's like one of them or maybe two of them that made us pay some money, but everyone else just said that's fine.
Yeah, it just seemed, yeah, the lyrics are very, yeah, like you say, cliches, very, very common terms. It seems.
Yeah, exactly. Strange. Like everything that glitters isn't gold or whatever. I don't think that's not a Robert Plant, original phrase, I don't think.
It's a bumper sticker. It's a okay. So I guess in more recent years, Built to Spill plays the songs of Daniel Johnson. Now this is recorded prior to Daniel's passing, released afterward. Did Daniel hear any of the recordings of this before he passed?
No, uh-uh.
Okay.
Yeah, well what happened was we played some shows with them. His management asked us if we wanted to do a few shows as his backup band. He was doing a tour and he had different bands in different regions. So we did a little Northwest thing with him. We did Boise, Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver, I think, four shows maybe. And so we had a big list of songs that they said that he could do. So I listened to him a lot. I wasn't familiar with everything, you know. It was like 100 songs or something. So I listened to throughout his whole career. And then we picked maybe like 30 or something that we thought were cool. And we practiced them a bunch by ourselves. Me and the rhythm section, Built to Spill. It was a 3-piece. And then we never rehearsed with him. He showed up for the first show and we just had a little sound check. And that was kind of it. And he picked the songs he wanted to play. And when we were doing rehearsals, though, a friend of mine was like, I'd like to hear a version of this, you know, just you guys doing it, because I was singing the songs, you know, to keep everyone going. And she wanted that version. So we kept kind of meaning to make a recording, but we never really did it. And then we played those shows with them. And then a year later, we had a little session at a friend's house. We're going to do some demos of some new songs just because we had a couple days off between gigs. And we're going to work on some new demos. And then I was like, hey, let's do those Daniel Johnson songs instead. And we recorded them and just quickly and for fun. And then we decided it sounded nice enough that it could be released. And so, and Daniel, like we didn't become friends or anything. I don't think he was interested. We didn't even think about, you know, I don't think he would have given a shit about us playing his songs or, you know, I don't think he cared if he'd been interested in hearing those versions or anything. So
I was just wondering if there was ever a conversation about him potentially participating in one or two.
No, that was not the idea of the whole thing was to do that, to just be covers, not to back him up in the studio. Cause you know, there were already studio versions of these songs and stuff. And they were, you know, better than our versions. Our versions were our own little weird thing.
Okay. And there's a songbook in the album that I believe takes directly from your notes you had when you were learning the songs. Is that right?
Yeah, and that was Tae Won Yu, who did a lot of album covers for Built to Spill. He did Perfect From Now On, Keep It Like a Secret, Ancient Melodies of the Future. And so we asked him to do this record cover, and it was his idea to put this book in. He designed it and everything. And yeah, it's a nice little, sweet little addition.
That's what always kind of gets me about the material that you and your projects put out. They're beautiful packages. There's extra stuff in there. You know, it's not just record sleeve, which is in most cases fine, but having extra stuff in there is always stuff to read and other things to learn while you listen to the music.
I agree. And sometimes, like we had a record in 2015 or 16 or something called Untethered Moon. And that one, I did the record cover. I designed it and did the art, or, you know, found people do art and stuff. And I wanted it to be punk rock and not have anything. So it was really simple, just a front and a back cover. And I didn't want anything else. Wanted it to be bare bones, because I felt like that's kind of an aesthetic choice as well. But I do like, and the new record, we went all out and just has a gatefold and her poster and lyrics, and, you know, and that was because we found an artist that we really loved, and I kind of felt the way you do. Like, I guess I kind of regretted that we hadn't done much with that other record, because I was seeing all these people doing these more, you know, these fancier things, that more collectible kind of things. And so this time we did that.
Well, you know, with Untethered Moon, yeah, high speed, low drag. And like you say, it's a statement in itself that all the extras are unnecessary, but they are enjoyed.
I agree. So. Especially when you get a good artist like Alex Graham, and, you know, someone. And then like the poster that those Brazilian guys did the collage art with and stuff. So we just had a lot of good artists, so, you know, wanted to put as much of it in as possible.
And finally on Sub Pop. So yeah. Okay. And there seems to be a cadence for Built to Spill. About every 5 years is a release cycle. Is that I'm assuming that's, you know, we're not due for another Built to Spill album for quite some time, it feels like.
Yeah, that's, you know, just the way life speeds up, I guess, as you get older and your brain slows down or something happens. So it feels to me like the records are coming out as quickly as they need to, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And you're getting ready to come to Australia, and I'll put the link in this episode page to those shows. October 2023. How long has it been since you've been to Australia, Doug?
I've done a couple interviews and people have told me, and I forget. I feel like 16 or 17 was it when we were there last.
Okay.
15, or maybe 15. 2015. I'm not sure.
And is there anything in particular special you're planning for the Australian shows?
Well, nothing different than what we've been doing for the last couple of years. But I've been playing with these rhythm section women that haven't been down there yet, so that'll be special. But yeah, nothing, just bring the show that we've been doing in the US and Europe over there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you tend to, I mean, the set list is always mixed up. No two shows are the same, or with the exception, sure, maybe it's certainly not planned that way. Maybe exactly. By luck, you know,
arbitrarily, there might be a couple. Exactly.
How far in advance of the day do you write the set list?
Oh, you know, it's one of those things that's kind of like a, you know, since I do it every day, it's sort of a little bit of an annoying task usually. So sometimes I like to try to get it over with early in the day, but sometimes,
like sit-ups.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like right before the show. But yeah, we usually know 40 or so songs so that we can, you know, we can play two or three nights. We can play three nights somewhere and play a different set every night.
Right. Okay.
For the most part, maybe have a couple songs overlap, but, you know, it's just, I don't know. I like it. It's fun. It's fun to mix it up. It's fun to play different songs at different times. It's fun to open the show with completely different songs. It just makes us like, there's a kind of, it gives us a sort of confidence to know that we can do any song anywhere in the set and it works. The only thing is that I feel like the end of the show, there's only a handful of songs that I feel like can kind of end the show. Mm-hmm. Based on years of touring and what it seems like the crowd, the fans like the most, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You like to leave on the proverbial high, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
When you go in for a sound check, do you kind of take in like, okay, what's the building? Like what am I inspired to do? What are we inspired to open with or on the set list? Or is it much more simple than that?
Oh, sometimes I do that a little bit, but then it's usually not, you know, usually it's not if we're in a big room, it's boomy or something, like let's try to play more slow songs, you know, because the fast songs are just going to get lost in this room. Mm-hmm. And maybe the slow songs will make a little more sense. A little bit of that, but not too much. Mostly it's just whatever I feel like we're doing well at that time during the tour, what I am enjoying playing or feel comfortable singing, or you know, more along those lines of just like what feels like our strongest material at the moment. And then also the other people throw in their ideas, the other band members or tour manager or some friend of ours might request a song. Or and there's a mm-hmm. couple places that I have friends that make the set lists. There's a couple of friends that when I'm in their town, I'm like, you know, they know that I send them the master list and they make my set list.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, Doug. Well, thank you very much for your patience with all the record nerd questions here. I want to make sure that people are aware, especially Australians, Built to Spill is coming to our country October 2023, feelpresents.com. I'll put the link in this episode page. Sydney, Newstead, Hobart, several dates in Melbourne and Adelaide at the Harvest Festival. So, again, links to those tickets and such will be in this episode page. Also, make sure you pick up a copy of When the Wind Forgets Your Name. It's available right now. It's on Sub Pop, where you get all your records at your record shop. You can dial it up on streaming and enjoy it and then order the vinyl anytime. And again, Doug, thank you so much for coming on the show and safe travels. We'll see you when you get to Sydney.
Thanks, Nate.
I am so stoked that they are coming down to Australia. Again, feelpresents.com. I'm going to be at the Sydney show. If any of you guys are there, just give us a DM and maybe we'll have a beer together at the bar. Melbourne's getting 4 shows. 3 of them are already sold out. So if you're thinking about seeing Built to Spill, get your tickets quick. Otherwise, they could be gone before you know it. Oh, and don't forget, there's an extended version of this interview available to show patrons at patreon.com/vinylguide. And that's it for this episode of the Vinyl Guide Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Share them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter if that still exists. Do a screen grab on Instagram. Do a TikTok dance if you want. And tell all your record nerd buddies how to enjoy the Vinyl Guide Podcast on that smartphone of theirs. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.